Hello, and welcome to Money Talks, a special bonus podcast from Slate Money, where we have conversations with brilliant and interesting people. I'm Emily Peck, co-host of Slate Money, and I'm here today with Jen Murphy. Jen is a writer, editor. She covers travel and fitness, and for the past 20 years, Jen's published this amazing column for the Wall Street Journal called What's Your Workout, where you wrote about the fitness routines of basically everyone, from busy executives, politicians, famous sports personalities, 100-year-old swimmers, people that got shot out of cannonballs. Jen, welcome to Money Talks.
Thanks so much for having me, Emily. I'm really excited to be here.
So today on the show, we are going to get into it. We're going to talk about how to fit workouts into your busy life, how to adjust your workout as you age. We're going to talk about how Al Sharpton doesn't eat dinner, and more. That's all coming up on Money Talks.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So I guess to start, I don't know the answer to this, even though I was very briefly, I had the honor of being your editor at the Journal, but I don't know where the idea for the column came from.
You know, the idea started, I thought it was Jamie Heller, who's a senior editor at the Journal still. Mm-hmm. She thought it was someone else, but essentially Personal Journal was just in its infancy. Jamie had remembered that I was a personal trainer in college, and at the time I was just a news assistant at the Journal. And I'll never forget, she pulled me aside and was like, I want to give you a column. And I'm like, I'm just out of college. Like, are you kidding? And she explained, she's like, I think people really struggle to fit exercise into their routines, and it'd be really interesting to figure out what the formula is to have a successful workout. And so that's kind of how it started. And she said, why don't you profile yourself as our guinea pig? And I will tell you, I think 9 out of 10 editors laughed at the idea and said, no one's going to read this. And, you know, almost 20 years later, we absolutely proved they were wrong.
So wrong. I mean, I remember that first column, right? You set out your shorts, your running shorts the night before or something.
No, I actually, this is so embarrassing, and I no longer do this for the record. I would actually sleep in my running shorts, so I could literally roll out of bed. I mean, that was actually in the headline, which I'm mortified to look back on. But, you know, in your 20s in New York, you burn the candle at both ends, and I was determined. I was like, you know what, no matter how late I get home, at 5 a.m., I'm going out the door, I'm going to get my run in. That at the time was my trick to making it happen.
Well, that's great. And I'm sure there's more tricks that you have learned in the past 2 decades. But before I ask you about that, what was the criticism? Like you say, you wrote in your last column, the last What's Your Workout column, that people said, you know, fitness, this kind of thing doesn't belong in a finance publication. Obviously, you didn't agree. Why do you think it was a good fit for a business publication?
I think, and I'll tell you, we still get comments on some of the fitness columns in the Journal saying this doesn't have a place here. And I said it in my last column, I think people realize the best investment they can make is truly in their health. Like, if you are working so hard to save all this money, what's the point of it if you can't enjoy it because you're not healthy? Right. So I think there's really been a shift, and people realize like time and money invested in health and fitness in the long run really pay off, and it's something we all have to pay attention to no matter our age.
Yeah. And I mean, you've talked to some really successful people that, you know, are really busy. What have you learned about, aside from sleeping in your workout clothes, what have you learned about, you know, how people fit it in?
I think the top thing, and this is what I love about the column, you have to find something you somewhat enjoy, and whether it's because you actually like the activity or you like the people you're with while you're doing the activity, it just makes it so much easier to become a priority if there's some aspect of it that you enjoy. And that probably is going to change throughout your lifetime. And I think the column has proven there is not a one-size-fits-all exercise program, and exercise does not have to mean joining an expensive gym and, you know, lifting weights. Like, we found people who've done everything from pogo stick, which that gentleman actually had to do it because he was losing, he had the onset of sarcopenia, which is bone loss, and needed something that would help build muscle through impact. To Carl Lewis, who after being an Olympic track star, like, fell in love with doing trapeze and aerial silks. So I think finding something you like helps you prioritize it. If you loathe it, it's easier to push it to the side. And also being adaptable and realizing, like, you might do a total 180 and change your workout once you have a family or once you start a new career. And that's what I think we saw a lot of, is as people transitioned from college to their career to family, exercise kind of disappeared for a lot of people. And then they had to rediscover something because they realized, like, wow, I'm really got out of shape in those last few years.
Right. When I became a new mother, it was just like, well, when am I supposed to even just leave my kid alone so I can go run or go do whatever? And then you kind of think, and then I think for a while it was like, well, I'll just do videos in my living room or something. You kind of figure it out, I guess.
Yeah. And I think also it's realizing, like, you might not be at the, like, we are not professional athletes. So we might not be at our peak fitness every year of our lives, but just trying to fit some type of movement in every day, I feel like, is a win. So kind of changing that all or nothing mentality, especially during the busier periods of our life.
Yeah. And so, I mean, anyone can work out. You can run anywhere. You can do body weight stuff. You, just like you said, you don't need expensive gym membership. And I mentioned the busy executives just before, but the thing about the busy executives is they actually have control, a lot of them, most of them, over their schedule. And there are so many working people that really don't. Do you think, like, the idea of, like, setting aside time in your life for fitness is a privilege for the well-off? Did you ever speak to more working class folks for the column?
So it was always a tug of war with myself and the editors because, you know, they want the head CEOs and they want the professional athletes. And I always say, like, you know, they can, as just as you said, they can control their time and schedule. They have the money and resources to invest in this. So, you know, while it might be interesting to read about, there wasn't really the relatability there for the average person. And I 100% agree with you. And I will say, And I'm embarrassed to admit this, like, back in my late 20s and early 30s when I was an editor at magazines, not that I suggest people lie, but instead of saying I was going to the gym or going to a yoga class, I said I was going to physical therapy at my lunch break. And that was acceptable. But if I said I was going to the gym, I would get looks. And, you know, being someone younger, just starting my career, I was very sensitive about that. So I would always just say, because I, in my head, I'm like, this is kind of like physical therapy. I think it's changing. I do think the mindset is changing. I think it's fantastic when you get people in leadership roles who encourage their staff to make time for exercise, but it is tricky and it takes, you really have to have confidence and make it a priority to say, especially to someone who's your boss, like, no, this is my hour or this is my 30 minutes. And, you know, if you really want this meeting or call to happen, it will happen afterwards. But I think it's definitely easier for people in power.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. I guess I haven't thought about it like that. It sounds, again, like parenting, where you have to be like, I need to leave to go to the concert or I need to take my kid to the doctor. But yeah, we need more people at work to say, I need to leave to go running for an hour or to go work out. I think I have a good situation at Axios where I have an editor who's like, okay, I'm signing off to go to spin class and I'll be back in an hour. And, you know, I see people all the time, like, I'll be gone for an hour for my run or whatever.
And that just sets a precedent to be like, I'm your boss and I'm making time. Mm-hmm. So you should make time. And sometimes, you know, as I got, you know, along, like, prolonged my career and felt more confident, like, I'd be the one saying, hey, does anyone want to join me for a run after work? Or, if I'm at a conference, I would say, hey, before the conference starts, I'm going to go do this in the gym. Does anyone want to come? So just encouraging people to make those healthier decisions.
Right. And you also, I guess you want to balance that as a boss. Like, you don't want to make people feel like they have to.
No. We did an interesting story. It was one of the workout columns. I think it was in 2023, actually. And it was a CEO who invited people to come play basketball. Uh-oh. And I remember an editor's wife was like, well, what if you don't play basketball? Like, are you frowned upon? Are you? I know I would be intimidated because basketball is not my strong suit. But he really encouraged people to come even if they wanted to just stay on the sidelines and watch versus participate, and used that time at his house on the court as a networking and mentoring session, which I thought was really interesting.
That's interesting. It's like a more proletarian spin on, you know, we're all going golfing or something, because that seems intimidating.
Exactly. And I'll never forget, he's no longer the mayor, but Newell Clark at the time was the mayor of Lexington, North Carolina. And I thought it was so great. Like, he would do these open, they're kind of like runs / adventure courses through the neighborhood. And just invite people along, and afterward at his house, there'd be snacks and water and drinks. And you know, what he said was, this shows people in the community, like, I'm out there doing this. I have people with me. We're having a good time. So I just thought, like, as a government leader, that's a great, great example to set for people in the community.
Yeah. Yeah, that does sound really nice. I just remembered an episode of Veep where Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character is running a race, and like the joke is she's really fast and good, and like her, she makes her staff run with her, and they're all out of shape because she overworks them to death.
Amy says, I give my support to the president in this very challenging time.
Emphasize it's important to respect the process of the hearing. She needs a get out. Because cuts to the chase, Amy, I'm being overtaken by a banana.
Oh my God, please.
Ma'am, I need you to speed up or slow down. We can't have you in a photo finish with a banana.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This episode of Slate Money is brought to you by Wondery, which is a podcast company, and it makes a podcast called The Best One Yet, and it is a daily podcast hosted by Nick and Jack, who serve up three of the most interesting business news stories every day, and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie, or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones, or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? That's the kind of stuff you find on The Best One Yet. So be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more. Wondery means business.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com. I wanted to ask you, some of the people you've interviewed over the years are, I mean, they're just so intense.
Yes.
You profiled one guy, he was 50 years old. So I was very curious to read it because I'm 50 now. And it was like, he runs really fast. And I was like, yeah, how does he do it? And there was an anecdote in the piece that he had torn his rotator cuff And his doctor said, don't run. And he was like, the next day I was out running with my arm in a sling. And I was like, this isn't good.
I know exactly who you're talking about. So that is Ken Rideout, who he's amazing. Like, he discovered endurance sports later in life, and he's getting faster and faster as he gets older.
Yeah.
He does have that no pain, no gain mentality. And I think one thing I've learned in doing the column is no pain, no gain is not a recipe for the long run. Like, if you are looking to achieve overall health and longevity, that is not the way to go, ignoring injuries. So, but a lot of people I have profiled, one person who did not make it into our greatest hits for the final column was a producer for The Simpsons, and he just cracked me up. Like, he was so hardcore about never missing a workout. I had one gentleman who I will not name. They wanted to close the gym, and he had not finished his workout. He had like two more sets left.
Uh-huh.
And his wife had to come kind of gradually pull him out because he was close to tears. He was so upset. So I think, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people like that who do take it to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the majority of us, when you push that hard, you're eventually going to crash. And that's when you fall off your workouts. So I think taking a much more moderate approach is better for a lot of us. But, you know, it is those are people who have made exercise non-negotiable. Like, their day is not complete. And they, you know, the gentleman who almost started crying, like, he's gotten up at 2 or 3 a.m. to get his workout in. And I've toyed with that over the years and have come to understand you need to weigh, is it better to skimp on sleep and get in my workout, or does my body really need the sleep right now?
Yeah.
So just really thinking, like, what do I need right now? Is my goal to lose weight? Am I training for a marathon, or am I just kind of maintaining? And maybe that extra 2 hours in bed is better than that hour in the gym.
Yeah. A lot of your columns, I mean, these are people who are kind of like maximizing their fitness, you know, but I think not everyone wants to be that intense. Some people, they just want to be, you know, healthy. What advice would you give to them besides sleeping? I mean, sleeping does seem very important.
Sleeping is important. And recent studies, which I think is so interesting, and something I've really tried to embrace this year, like, recent studies have shown trying to have a consistent bedtime is almost just as important, if not as important, as getting like the quality and hours of sleep. So I really try to make myself have a healthy like bedtime schedule if I can do that, just getting to bed at the same, around the same time every evening.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, we've talked lately, there's a lot of talk of this pandemic of loneliness and social isolation. I think that's one thing people forget, like, exercise doesn't have to be the lonely runner. It can be a great social outlet. Like, you might hate what you're doing, but you might love the people you're with. So I think it's a great way, particularly as you get older, to have some sense of community that, yes, you're benefiting your body, but you're also benefiting your mind. And your social connections, whether it's a running club, a walking club, a pickup soccer game you play. So just making it fun and social, I think, is a big part of it for people.
Got it. I feel like this is controversial, but you said it in your last column. Is morning really the best time to work out? Like, are you just definitively saying that?
I took that away. So I looked back at almost 20 years of columns.
Uh-huh.
The people who worked out in the mornings tended to be the most consistent.
Mm.
I will say I hate to even use the word morning workouter. I used to think if I did not get my morning workout in, I was ruined for the day. Like, I couldn't work out any other time.
Yeah.
I actually personally think, yes, if you can make it a priority in the morning, it ensures that nothing else gets in the way. Like, there's not that extra phone call. The kids don't need to be picked up at school. However, I have learned some mornings get away from me. And I always say have backup plans. So I might have a quick 15 or 20 minute workout. I sneak in before lunch or before dinner. So it might not be what I had in mind that day, but I think flexibility is more important than saying you have to do it in the morning. Again, like, the upside of the morning is that you're likely to have less interruption and you just start the day feeling like you've accomplished something already.
Yeah, I am a big proponent of the morning workout and it makes me feel better. Like if I don't work out, it's almost like that feeling I used to have when I didn't have coffee. Like I feel like cloudy or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay. Another question that I'm personally very invested in. Mm-hmm. Workout routines and aging. Like how do people come to terms with the limitations of their aging? But you must know this because you started the column when you were in your 20s.
In my 20s.
It's 20 years later. So, I mean, you, even though you're like one of the fittest people out there, you must feel this and have had to adjust. So like, how do people adjust to that? How did you?
So I've talked to a lot of people I've profiled about this, and I'll never forget. There was one woman who was in her late 60s and she's like, it's so upsetting to see my times on my bike from 10 or 15 years ago and then to see them now. I think a lot of it is mindset. And that's what she said. She's like, my mindset is I want to be doing this until I'm 80. I don't have to be the fastest person. I just want to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, like longevity is such a buzzword right now. So for me personally, like I used to be a runner and I will admit this. I wasn't fit. I was a runner. I looked fit. I could not do anything functional. Like when my trainer first saw me try to do a lunge, she was appalled. Like I just didn't. And running, if you were not supplementing it with strength training or mobility, I had a lot of muscle imbalances. So I take a much more holistic approach to exercise now. And I will say at 43, I'm far better shape than I was in my 20s. On all levels, but am I going out and running a marathon every day? Like, absolutely not. Like I run probably 3 days a week, maybe 5 miles because I want to be running when I'm in my 60s and 70s. But what's more important to me is making sure I get my mobility in, my strength training so I can keep, you know, as a writer who sits most of the day, I have to undo all of that damage of like type hip flexors and being hunched over my laptop. So it's really a mindset. And I think one thing I love, a reader just complained about our recent Anatomy of a Workout columns. And that's a column where we interview professionals from professional sports teams, so athletic trainers or physical therapists, and give readers a 6-exercise workout. And we always give an option to up-level or down-level the exercise. Mm-hmm. And this reader said, how old do you think your readers are? This is ageism. This is too hard. Mm. And I said, in my opinion, ageism would be making everything easy and assuming that if you were older, you can't do this. And I have found most of the people I've profiled, like Ken Rideout was 50, there was another woman in her 50s. Like, if you train, you can slow down the effects of aging. So you don't have to get slower and weaker. Like, eventually we will gradually. Mm-hmm. But we just did a column on people skiing until they're 100. And if you are diligent about it and take that approach of the longevity mindset, you really can do a lot into your older years. So again, I think using age as an excuse is something we all do. And I always say, my friends tease me, like, why shouldn't I try to train like an athlete? Like, I'm certainly not a professional athlete, but I want to train to be able to do athletic movements throughout the day. I might not be hucking myself on my snowboard in the half pipe, but I would like to know, like, if I slipped on the ice, I could regain my balance on one foot when I'm walking down the sidewalk. So right. I think a lot of the training that athletes do can actually translate to everyday life for most of us.
You always had a section in your columns about the diet, what people eat. Mm. And I mean, I remember editing your column and it was always like, everyone you talked to was like, I have a salad with a protein.
Uh-huh.
What have you learned about people's diets? Do you think they were being truthful with you about the salad protein thing?
So I think people fibbed the most when they talked about their diet. I think the salad protein is true, but I think a lot of people there's so many fast casual restaurants in this big cities. The salad is like 5 portion sizes. So it's probably a salad with protein and a lot of bad dressing for you. And it's probably the amount of salads you should be eating throughout the week in one portion. I find most people their diet falls apart in the evenings.
Yeah.
Because you're at work meetings, you might be drinking. And I, you know, we don't get into this in the column, but as someone who is a personal trainer, I remember I would have a client who would come, he'd want to walk on the treadmill 30 minutes, 3 days a week. He was obese. And I asked him about his diet and said, you know, 3 days a week of 30 minutes of walking is not going to, you know, move the needle unless you stop consuming so many calories. So I think people forget when they look at health from a holistic perspective, like diet is such a big part of the equation, and we overlook that. And someone, an expert I just talked to, mentioned when we do exercise, we tend to overestimate how many calories we're actually burning and how hard we work. And we should reward ourselves. It's like, great, I went to the gym, but we often over reward ourselves. So all those calories burned just get, you know, it's so easy to replace them. Like if I burn 300 calories on a treadmill, like it's like two slices of pizza. So just being mindful of, like, again, energy in, energy out. And like, what is, I find when I am exercising regularly, it makes me want to eat healthier. Like I feel better making good food choices.
This episode of Slate Money is brought to you by Wondery, which is a podcast company, and it makes a podcast called The Best One Yet, and it is a daily podcast hosted by Nick and Jack, who serve up three of the most interesting business news stories every day and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie, or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones, or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? That's the kind of stuff you find on The Best One Yet. So be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more. Wondery means business.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm wondering, I mean, over the 20 years, attitudes about some of the things you were just saying, like bad dressing or, you know, making the wrong choices or not eating healthy. I feel like the language around that and the way people talk about eating and disordered eating and like fat shaming has really evolved. Do you feel like the column evolved with that? How do you think about that?
I think because I'm not a nutritionist and don't have a nutrition background, we really tried to play down the diet aspect of things.
Yeah.
And I'd always say like diet's such a big part of it. But, you know, one thing I noticed, which is so fascinating, like most, and I shouldn't say most, a good handful of the professional athletes I would interview, like they had horrendous diets. I was like, are you sure you want to admit you eat that? But like a lot of fast food and sugar. And again, like they're burning thousands of calories a day. Mm-hmm. But most people, and we didn't get into the nitty gritty of it, like most people we profiled who saw significant fitness gains, if they were starting from a place of being out of shape, did say it was a combination of fitness and diet change. Like there was a gentleman named Eric Greensmith, who was one of my favorite columns. He decided he wanted to retrain to be a lifeguard. So he wanted to basically get like his college job.
And
he was in his 60s, and he got back on the tower at 67. But he said he really had to look at his diet and cut things out to get his weight down. It wasn't just the exercise. So I definitely think it's a combination.
Yeah. The trend now is sort of like, not to shame people about whatever it is they decide to eat. And it's almost like it sometimes can feel like talking about eating healthy is somehow not okay anymore.
And I think it's because we got into so many diets, like
the
paleo diet. Ugh. And I interviewed someone who was a fruitarian who only mostly ate fruit.
Oh, no.
And you know, you get into those fad diets. And again, I mean, it's just like these weight loss drugs. It's like when you stop, things go back to normal if you haven't changed your habits. And I know I wouldn't want to be on like a paleo diet for the rest of my life. So again, like I look at it as moderation. I know we hear that all the time, but I also, you know, I challenge myself, like I'm going to try not to eat anything that's in a packaged bag, or like I really try to stick to whole foods when possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I just, Al Sharpton really struck me because he, he's lost so much weight. And I think he said in your column that he doesn't really eat dinner anymore or something. I was like, Al, eat some dinner.
I know, you know, a few people mentioned they don't eat dinner. And for me, yes, for me, dinner is a time of socializing. Even if like for health reasons, I love breakfast. Like I have a massive breakfast. People look at me like I'm crazy. But I just think food is such, it's so social. So it's really hard to go out to dinner with your spouse or your colleagues and just sit there and not enjoy. For me, I think your overall fitness and health game plan also has to fit in lifestyle. And like we said before, like being social and having a strong friend network is just as essential to your, you know, mental well-being as eating well.
Yeah. How have exercise trends changed over the past two decades? Like what was hot when you started and what's sort of over now? And what's like the big thing now?
It's really interesting you ask that. When the last column ran and we did a look back over the 19 years of columns, a reader wrote in telling me she started reading What's Your Workout in her 20s and discovered CrossFit through me.
Oh.
Not through me, through the column, and that she still does it now in her 40s. And it's you know, CrossFit seems so old school now.
Yeah.
But there's definitely been a few trends. I think Peloton had been super hot and then has died off a tiny bit. Zumba went through a phase that's died off a little bit.
I still don't really understand what Zumba is.
I've had to try all these workouts and I am not made for that one, let's just say. We saw a big uptick in people doing boxing workouts or cardio boxing, Zwift, which people are racing on their bikes. But at the same time, I always say this, like right now we're seeing a lot of AI-powered fitness equipment that claims that you can get, you know, double the benefits in half the time. And one thing I'll say is, you know, during COVID, the editors were like, we have to end What's Your Workout? Gyms are closing. And I laughed because I'm like, you don't need a gym to work out. It's so difficult to say exercise is easy because it's obviously not for a large part of the population. But I'm just so amazed if you add some walking into your routine, push up, like, you know, the old school calisthenics. I got in the best shape of my life during COVID with a routine that took about 30 minutes or less. And it consisted of lunges, jump lunges, squats, jump squats, push-ups, and pull-ups. And at the time, I could not do a pull-up. So I would just kind of hang or put my chin up.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is as old school as it gets. And I was shocked by how strong I got. So trends will come and go. And again, if it's something you like, it's great. But exercise doesn't have to be expensive. One gentleman we profiled during the pandemic, he would go walking 3 times a day. He would do the morning walk with his dog, an afternoon walk he would take, business calls, his evening walk, he would talk to his mom or a friend on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw such significant gains in his fitness and in weight loss. And again, like that's one thing I tried to start doing last year. Like, how can I get more steps into my day? And the more that becomes a habit, it's just ingrained in your daily schedule. So yeah, trends are great. But I think if you can stick to the old school stuff, that works just as well.
Man, this is so inspiring. I have to come back and listen and write down exactly your COVID routine. I can do it. Jen, tell listeners where they can find you.
I am still penning the Anatomy of a Workout column every other week for the Wall Street Journal. So that is where we give readers a 6 exercise workout routine. One thing I found while writing What's Your Workout is that the majority of people, even athletes, don't know why they're doing what they're doing. So Anatomy of a Workout tries to give some explanation, like, why do you want to do a lunge? Why should you do a plank? And then I continue to write fitness columns for the Wall Street Journal. The next one we are doing in the coming months, we'll look at everything from zone 2 heart rate training to what alcohol actually does to your performance and training. And then I also have a side hustle, which I write about travel, and you can follow that on at Jen Runs World. I will say I'm probably anyone who says they can't continue a workout routine on the road. I dare them to challenge me because I don't know many people who travel as much as I do.
Wow. Jen, thank you so much for coming on. This is really inspiring.
No, thank you for having me. I love talking about this.
And that's it for our show today. Thanks to Jared Downing and Shayna Roth for producing. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday with Felix and Elizabeth for a regular episode of Slate Money. Thanks for listening.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.